Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher and a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so that's what we talk about on this podcast. I share ideas and strategies. I tell stories of things that worked, but also some of my big epic fails as well. And I also interview people, experts, because I am on this journey as well. I truly believe the teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And so sometimes I talk to experts about all of these different ideas. And one of the things I care deeply about is equity. And I love this idea of teachers transforming their classroom practice. I think that itself is a form of creativity. And so I'm really excited about this podcast episode that I just got a chance to finish. It was with Elena Aguilar. So Elena Aguilar is a writer, leader, teacher, coach, and podcaster. She is the author of 7 highly acclaimed books, The Art of Coaching, The Art of Coaching Teams, Onward, Cultivating Emotional Resilience in Educators, and The Onward Workbook, Coaching for Equity, and The Art of Coaching Workbook. So plenty of different books. Her 7th title, The PD Book, 7 Habits to Transform Professional Development, was released in May of 2022, which is right now, it was a couple months ago. She has also been a frequent contributor to Edutopia, ASCD's Educational Leadership and EdWeek Teacher. She is the founder and president of Bright Morning Consulting, an organization committed to helping individuals and organizations create the conditions for transformation. And I love that she's all about this idea of transformational learning and transformational coaching. Elena has taught tens of thousands of folks how to have conversations that build a more just and equitable world. Elena can be heard demonstrating these conversations on the Bright Morning podcast. She is also the co-founder of Kenya Big Picture Learning. She's on the advisory board of USC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center, and she is a certified mindfulness meditation teacher. She lives in Oakland, California with her husband, son, and 2 cats. When she's not coaching or writing, she enjoys traveling around the world, photographing birds, hiking, drinking coffee, and reading fiction. I really enjoy this podcast episode, and I hope you enjoy it as well. So without further ado, here is Elena Aguilar. All right, we have with us here Elena Aguilar, and she is a true expert on coaching and on equity, and I'm super excited about talking to her right now. So welcome.
Thank you, John. I'm really glad to be here.
Yeah. So a little bit before we get into the topic, I would love to hear a little bit about your story and how you became passionate about that.
So I became a teacher in the mid-1990s, and I moved to Oakland, California to teach. I first taught elementary school, and my plan was to be a teacher for a long time. I had this mental model of you become a teacher and you be a teacher for decades. But I only wanted to stay in Oakland for 2 years because I wanted to be in the countryside. That was 27 years ago, and I'm still in Oakland, California. It is a city that I have grown to love, although I still always want to be in the countryside. But in those first couple of years teaching, I saw a tremendous amount of teacher turnover in my school. After 3 years, almost 50% of the teachers I had started with had left the school. And I heard from my students about the impact that that had on them. So in my first year teaching, I taught second grade, and my students would come up to me in the middle of the year, sort of at recess or something, and say, "Are you going to stay all year? Are you going to come back next year?" And again, I had this mental model of like, you come, you stay, you teach for a long time, of course. And I'd say, of course I am. And they'd say, you're not going to go teach in Berkeley? That's the neighboring city where the perception is that conditions for teachers are much better and so on. I'd say, no, I'm staying here. And then I saw in those first few years, again, just how many teachers left and how many teachers left in part because of burnout and exhaustion and not feeling fulfilled or feeling like they were having an impact in their roles. And so I would say from the very beginning of my teaching career, I became really interested in how to retain teachers, how to sustain them, how to help teachers feel like they're having the impact that they wanted to have coming into the profession. And my equity lens has, I would say that's for many biographical reasons, been present all my life. But as I began teaching in Oakland and saw a greater array of equity issues and inequities, my social justice lens just sort of sharpened and was heightened. And so this commitment became intertwined between a commitment to teacher resilience and sustainability and well-being and educational equity. And so really those two threads have formed the core of the work that I've done as a coach, as a leader in education for the last 20, I'm losing track of time. I think it's 27 years, 28 years, something like that.
So you mentioned the equity lens and the coaching aspect. Did you feel during that those early years that you had coaches who were able to provide you with support, or did you feel that lack?
So in my first years, I did not have coaching support. I did not have mentors. I sought out those people. I'm the kind of person who asks for help a lot and goes up and approaches people or emails people. I'm like, hi, I saw you teach last week and it was incredible. Can I come and spend some more time? Can you spend time with me? I got a coach in my fifth year of teaching. I was helping to start a new school and we had the support of a coach, and that coaching support was invaluable. That was a year that in some ways was the hardest year of my teaching career, which was the fifth year, but it was because of the helping to start a new school. I was teaching middle school for the first time, and I was really feeling conflicted about being in education or following the path I was on. And I got a coach who was just absolutely transformative and completely helped me sort of shift a lot of the mental models that I've been holding and helped me grow a lot and helped me feel impactful almost on a daily basis. And for many years since then, I have held her, her name was Liz, as my role model for coaching. And I would ask myself when I was coaching a teacher in the years since then, when I was coaching a teacher and I was stuck, I would ask myself, what would Liz say right now? What would Liz do? So that was invaluable, but that wasn't until year five.
It's interesting that you sought out coaching. You know, for me, I think about my experience, like I had a lot of misperceptions about coaching. And a lot of pride, you know, I didn't seek out coaching, especially in my first couple of years, right? I wanted to prove that I could do it. I wanted to prove that I could help. And, you know, we even had new district mentors, but I struggled with my new district mentor because she had a really deficit view of the students and a real negative view of the community. So this was a, you know, I taught. My background was I was teaching ELL. I had lived in that community for a while. I knew the community. I saw a lot of the strengths and assets, and I really struggled with that. So I had this combination of my own pride of I don't want help, right? So there's a little bit of that with coaching sometimes. And then I also, the coaching wasn't necessarily it's really hard to have coaching when someone has a negative view of your school or your community or your students. Like those two things made it a very, like it just didn't work for me. And so I'm curious, when you think about that, what are some of the barriers
like, again, for me, it really was pride, right? That was a huge part of it. And this misperception of coaching means weakness or something, or coaching means you're doing something wrong. What do you see as some of the barriers that teachers have from getting the necessary coaching?
Well, I think your reflection is insightful and definitely points to some important areas, you know, for you to unpack or have unpacked perhaps in the past. And I hear something else that's really critical, which is for teachers, particularly new teachers, the responsibility for the experience of coaching lies on those who have the positional power. And so what I hear in what you just shared is that your district or organization's model for coaching or framework or coaching program was, first of all, perhaps not articulated, maybe not clear, maybe not aligned, or maybe just not aligned with your values. I don't want to make the assumption that there wasn't one. But in other words, a coaching program needs to have the equivalent of many of the structures that we think of any successful program or organization having. It needs to have a sort of a mission statement, a vision. It needs to have core values. It needs to have a, this is what this program is and does, and this is how the people who work in it go about their work. So, for example, in the kind of coaching that I practice and that I lead trainings on and that I consult with districts and organizations on, that is at its core an equity-centered, equity-based, liberatory leadership, conscious leadership model in which someone who doesn't have an asset-based lens or strength-based lens and a refined equity lens, that kind of person just wouldn't be hired. And so what I'm hearing is perhaps in your values and approaches and orientations, a clash with what was at that point. And that may have been by design or may have been by default and sort of negligence, which is so many coaching programs are unintentionally rolled out. They're just sort of like, okay, we've got our teachers aren't doing what we want them to do. So we're going to throw out some coaches, which then becomes really problematic because it's a fix-it model. It's not a model for empowering teachers. And so the coaching model that I teach, that I write about, is one which at its core honors the agency of an individual and comes to them and says, not what's wrong with you and what do we have to fix, but what is going well? What can we amplify? What are you curious about? What do you care about? What do you want to refine? What do you know about your students? Who do you want to be for your students? And so while you say you were reluctant or you sensed, you know, you did, it sounds like sensed a sort of deficit approach in the coaching model. That's really common. That's pretty much the majority of coaching models are an attempt to like fix something that's wrong in teachers. And that's not the view that I take about what coaching is or can be. In my, again, in my approach and in my perception, that doesn't work. Fixing people, of course we have a natural defensive reaction when someone comes to us and they're trained to look at what's wrong. Of course we are human beings. We care about what we're doing. We care about the teaching, the instruction, the students that are in front of us. And so when someone comes in like that, of course we get defensive. You know, we may feel pride or a host of other emotions, fear. But a transformational coach can support someone to be the teacher they want to be, to examine, you know, what are the barriers? I mean, the barriers to working with a coach could be pride, but it's fear, because working with a coach is or can be about becoming tremendously vulnerable and being able to say all the things that you feel like, I know I'm not supposed to think this or feel this. I'm not supposed to dislike that kid. I'm not supposed to have this reaction to those girls who come from that cultural group. I know I'm not supposed to. What is going on with me? It makes me feel horrible. Ideally, you have a coach. You can talk through all of that. That's how you understand it and process it and grow. But in so many of our coaching models that are that take this. I mean, it's a viewpoint that reflects dominant culture, which is one of hierarchy and supremacy and so on. And so it just kind of, it takes intentionality to break with dominant culture. Let me stop there. I know I just said a whole bunch.
Yeah, no, it's great. You've kind of alluded to a little bit this idea of transformational coaching and coaching for equity and just a different approach. I'm curious if you could just kind of walk listeners through this idea of what that approach looks like, you know, how it works.
Yeah. Yes. Thanks for asking. So the model of coaching that I developed and wrote about in my first book, which is The Art of Coaching, which came out in 2013, was based on coaching approaches that I cobbled together and developed and added to for many years. And at the core of that model is this idea that when we are coaching someone, we are supporting them to become the person they want to be and the person who will meet the needs of their community. And so there's a duality there. There's both like, who do you want to be? And what are you doing here? Who are you serving? And who do they need you to be? And to help someone make those shifts or that growth in a transformational coaching model, we explore and work in these three domains that I call the three B's. And those are behaviors, beliefs, and ways of being. And so most traditional coaching models, and even any kind of change model, so many of them focus only on the behaviors, the actions, what you see in a classroom, what you see. You could think about, you know, other fields where there's also coaching focuses on just what we do. In my model, we also surface and explore the underlying beliefs. Because every behavior, whether we're conscious of it or not, every behavior emerges from a belief about ourselves, about others, about what is possible. And then the third B is the way of being. And that is a little bit more ambiguous. It's takes a little bit more to understand, but it has to do with emotions and identity and a sort of ontological, sort of existential sense of who we are as well.
Mm. Do you find, as you think about sort of coaching coaches and helping people who are new into coaching, do you find of those three mains, of those three domains, do you find that one of those is more challenging as a new coach? So I'm just imagining you're new to this coaching role. Which of those three do you think is the steepest learning curve, I guess?
Probably the ways of being, although, like, okay, I'll ask you a question. What kind of animal or creature, could be mythological, do you feel best represents who you are as a podcast host?
Oh, wow. Oh, that's tough. Yeah. So I'm probably going to say, I've got a Great Dane. I've got a Great Dane hat. Like, I'm probably like a Great Dane. So I think friendly, maybe sometimes too social, but also likes to observe, but also kind of a little bit awkward.
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I ended up with I guess I have a dog that represents probably my approach to podcasting too.
That's awesome. Okay, so I just asked you a question about your way of being.
Yeah.
And I asked through the elicitation of a metaphor and a symbol. And so although way of being is harder to learn how to coach, there's also a lot of sort of like hacks or shortcuts maybe in how you do that. And so let me just tell you in that maybe 90-second response, the first thing, because we're on video so we can see each other,
The
first thing I noticed as sort of my coach was actually your body language, your sort of sigh or exhale or the sounds that were not words, also your smile and sort of the way. And your response was indicated to me that question landed. That question, I know you're going to be thinking about this question. You're going to go, am I really a Great Dane or am I like, you know? And this is what, and then you said, you know, because I'm this, I'm that. And so that's the kind of question that helps us understand ourselves better and maybe our core who we are, which is this mixture of emotions. I mean, you named in your response, you named sort of emotions and social interaction. But there are some, and I love using this question of what kind of animal or creature or, you know, and I always say, you know, it can be, you can create a hybrid creature or whatever. And it's funny you say Great Dane because we're in the process in my organization, we're in the process of hiring someone. And I was just having this exchange with a teammate about what kind of dog would this person be? Do we want like, and actually a Great Dane came up as one of the possibilities. Do we want someone who's like a border collie who kind of herds people? Or do we want the sort of loyal German shepherd who's a little suspicious at first? But anyway, so the point there is that using symbolism and metaphor, analogies can really help us understand sometimes a way of being that we're trying to get to that other language can make elusive. So that's just one. So I think coaching ways of being can be hard. Coaching beliefs is also really challenging. That takes a lot of work to just understand how to recognize beliefs when you, because we experience our beliefs as like absolute truths. Like, no, this is not a belief, it's truth. But, you know, a belief is just a strongly held opinion. And so learning how to recognize beliefs and say, hey, you know, when you're coaching a teacher or something, what are the beliefs that you're holding about what your students can do? You know, well, those students can't. Like, what are the beliefs then? It's not shifting it from opinion to a recognition of this is a mental model that I'm carrying. This is a belief. So that also, people are really comfortable with coaching around behaviors because that we're so trained mm-hmm. to look at that level, but it's they're connected, but behaviors are surface level.
One of the things I'm struck by with that question of, you know, the animal question, you know, not only is it kind of a metaphor and it gets you thinking, I'm just, it seems very disarming, right? There's when you ask people to talk about, there is such a vulnerability in talking about your identity, right? For folks, and even beliefs at times. But what I love about that question is there's a sense of, it feels disarming, and there's a sense of how much I get to decide as I answer the question, how much I want to share. And that's really different than the way a lot of coaching that I've seen has been. It's a lot gets to be on you as the participant, as the teacher, as the one being coached to get to decide how much you're going to share. And I think that seems really different.
Absolutely. I mean, what you're naming and identifying is really an absolutely foundational core concept in learning, which is that there has to be psychological safety. So if I'm your coach and I'm holding space for you to learn, I have to develop a relationship with you. There has to be psychological safety. We know that about kids, but sometimes it doesn't transfer to remembering that adults need psychological safety too. And so everything when I'm building relationship with people, everything has to be invitational. It just does. And my questions will invite someone to enter at the level that they're comfortable with and to share what they're comfortable with. My questions are coming from the assumption that you know yourself best. And all I can do is offer some questions, hopefully create enough rapport so that you can share what you want to share, but you are the expert on you. And I don't need to be the expert on you. I just need to sort of provide some maybe signposts or some good questions or some thoughts about, you know, some invitations to go in different directions. And that's all I can do. I think one of the other things that I noticed that's perhaps useful to name about that question is it also invites a sense of play and lightness, and like everything doesn't have to be so serious. And maybe if I was coaching you, maybe next time you'd come back and you say, you know, I thought about that question a lot. And I thought maybe I'm you know, maybe I'm more like this or maybe I'm like that. Or I realized that, you know, Great Danes also, I mean, I can talk to you about dogs for a long time. And I had a Black Great Dane. I had a very important relationship with a Black Great Dane. So I can go, you know, but I think that's actually part of finding connections with people and being able to relate on a human level and remembering that as a coach, I'm fascinated by people. I love getting to know people. I'm just absolutely fascinated. And so for me, it's that inclination to curiosity really takes me out of the place of judgment and right and wrong. And I love learning, and it sort of combining this curiosity with people and learning and understanding what makes someone light up and be their best selves, the best teacher they can be, helps me form the questions that I ask.
So you mentioned the lens of equity, and you talked about kind of rooting coaching in a place of social justice. And I'm curious, I feel like that term equity has become very contentious. I have seen issues pop up in, you know, school board meetings all over the country. I've seen, I'll get angry emails on just the emails, the newsletter I send each week when I mention, you know, a term like equity. It is such a, it's become very, very heated. There's no other word that I can think of, very contentious. And so I'm curious, given that reality of any conversation about equity, what do you do if you're coaching someone who even the term equity just skyrockets straight to, this is reverse racism, this is awful. Do you know what I'm talking about? I'm just thinking, sure. How would you coach, you know, what does coaching look like in an environment where that's going on? I'm not sure if my question is making any sense, but.
Oh, totally. Yeah, absolutely. So first, as in your final phrase, that is the environment that's going on. People pick up their environment, right? We're conditioned, culturally, socially conditioned from the moment we're born and perhaps even before that. So acknowledge it's the environment. Yeah, that is what is going on. Number two, build relationship. Number three, do that by getting curious. So if that's what a teacher said, I'd say, tell me more. I'm curious. I can make assumptions about why they're saying what they're saying, but I actually really want to understand. I want to hear their perspective. And sometimes what happens is when people start, you know, as a transformational coach, you want to mostly ask facilitative, open-ended questions that provoke reflection. Sometimes when people are reflecting on the kinds of questions, like, tell me more about how you experience reverse racism. I want to understand. How do you understand your own identity? What do you know about your identity? You know, when you ask those kinds of questions, they start deepening their reflection. And sometimes, I don't want to make this a, like, you get them to realize that they're confused, but sometimes they do get to the point where they say things like, well, I mean, you know, yeah, okay, so my history wasn't that, and I know that that would have been really bad, and I'm glad that's not my history. But it's also, you know, like, I hear when people are saying all of that, and, like, don't get me wrong, just for your listeners, I want to be really transparent. I identify as Latina. My husband is African American. We have a Black son who's 18. My whole life has been deeply shaped by racism and classism and patriarchy. And so I am very committed to dismantling systems of oppression and those three that I just referenced. And when I'm talking to people who primarily would identify as white and American and you know, many of the identity markers that are different from mine, and they start expressing those things, I am still really curious. And I really want to understand their experience, because I believe and I know that actually the only thing that will transform our inequitable schools and our oppressive systems is compassion and curiosity. And that doesn't stop because someone is saying things that I know are echoing the larger environment and echoing things they've heard. And at the core of what they're saying, this is the hard part, because at the core of what they're saying is, I am so scared. I want love. I need love. I need social belonging. I need community. And I am so scared and I don't understand what's happening. So when I can find, stay connected to my own humanity and that part of me that it can empathize and be curious, I can build a relationship. And this is what I write about in Coaching for Equity, is really, how do you navigate all of this? How do you have those conversations? What do you do in those moments when someone says something that is just so offensive that you get really emotionally activated and you feel like, I cannot stay in this conversation talking to this person who just said that? So those are the kinds of things that are in that book.
That's, there's so much to think about and unpack there. I'm really struck by that role of curiosity, because it is so hard to not just jump straight to calling out something and proving, you know, like it becomes hard not to argue when it's something that you care deeply about, right? And the tell me more and let's think about it. I just think it's such a natural tendency to move either into argue or avoidance, and you're not, this is a third way that's totally different with curiosity.
Well, it is. And again, I'd say it's a way that we've been socially conditioned again. Like, that's what we've learned. Argue, defend. This is binary thinking. This is right and wrong. This is supremacy. This is my idea is better than yours. And that's at the core of all of the suffering that is going on. I mean, that's so much suffering in many countries and regions in the world. But that's not the only way that humans have related to each other or do in the world. There are other ways. And so this is what I hope to sort of remind people, because I do believe that at their core, most people are tremendously compassionate and kind. And even those who think that they aren't, or think that they wouldn't help those kind of people, 9 out of 10 of them, if it came down to seeing, you know, a child lying by the road dying of thirst, they would offer them some water, even though that may have, you know, even though all of their ideas may have previously led them to think, oh, I wouldn't help those kind of people. They would. And that's, and this is a choice that I am making about what to believe about humans. And I'll tell you, I spent many years coaching and getting into arguments with people and calling people out and shaming them. I spent many years as a coach doing that. And the bottom line was, it didn't work. It didn't work to make the lives of children any better. And so I went through my own very difficult period of like, this isn't working, Elena. Is there any other way that you could try doing this? What else could be done? Because ultimately, I don't want to be right. Ultimately, I want to leave this world a little bit better in my own tiny little way when I die. And I wasn't seeing the kind of impact on children in schools that I wanted to have. And I could trace it to my beliefs and my way of being. And it wasn't working.
Yeah. My final question is, you know, if someone is listening to this and they're in a coaching role, you know, there's a lot of folks who are coaching, or if they're in a leadership role where they're going to either be hiring coaches or even they're going to be coaching even in a leadership role, what would you recommend as kind of a first step for getting started with this approach to coaching? So that they're not necessarily jumping straight into change the behaviors.
Well, read my book. I guess I'm reading my book. I should also mention I have a podcast. It's the Bright Morning Podcast, and I have a lot of episodes about different aspects of transformational coaching. There is also a series that came out in the spring of 2022, an 8-part series called What to Say When You Hear Something Racist. And that could also be really helpful for those who are interested in doing work around equity. I check out my website. There's lots of free tools on my website. And then I think, you know, just start step by step exploring, seeing what resonates on, perhaps even what resonates on the level of behavior, of beliefs and ways of being, sort of what lights you up. Like, you know, you were really intrigued by this concept of working through curiosity and how, you know, what is possible by using the tool of curiosity. So just kind of listening for, like, going towards, I mean, I work from a strength-based, asset-based approach. And so go towards what lights you up, what gets you energized, what you feel like, oh, I already know something about that. Or in this other aspect of my life, I do that really well. How can I transfer those skills into coaching? So go, yeah, looking for those points of resonance.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I just appreciate you being on the show.
You're very welcome, John. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks.
All right. So there we have it. That was Elena Aguilar talking about coaching, talking about equity, talking about all the things that really matter on our professional growth. And I really enjoyed that podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcast? That would mean the world to me. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.